as we kind of expect every once in a while. So anyway, welcome. We are on the sixth habit. We'll be talking about the seventh habit. In the back, I noticed that the handouts that I emailed originally, some of them did, some of them did not have a lessons or a habit number seven material in there. So if you don't mind picking up, it's the sharpen your saw habit, the seventh habit. So pick up that lesson material when you leave, and that way you can be prepared to talk on Wednesday night. But we are quickly, I mean, last class is next Sunday. Is that correct? I believe it is, right? Yeah, well, let's go with that, right? We're just going to go with that. One of us ought to know, and I guess that's it. So we're going to go with that. So we will have a chance to wrap things up next Sunday, and if by chance I'm wrong, great. Then we have two classes to wrap that up. Yes, sir.
I think you got the following Wednesday also.
I have next Wednesday. So we have one today, counting today, one, two, three, four more classes. Great. There's some case studies that we will be able to cover, and that way we can kind of combine the different things that we've talked about and try to understand as best as we can. And you might lead us in a prayer before we close.
Let's all pray. Our God in heaven, we come before you now. We give you praise and thanks. We're so grateful for this class and for Larry and for his family and all the families that are represented here. Help us as we learn to be better families, that we will take your advice, take your learning, take your wisdom, your teaching from your word. And we know that there are others who have studied the subject, and we learn from them, Dr. Covey. We pray that we will not just learn and understand, but we will try to put these things into practice. You know, that's where we will benefit. We pray that we will all do so. Be with all the classes, all the teachers, and be with all of us today. Help our hearts to be in the right place. We pray in Christ's name.
So we are, you know, way up here in Synergy. So we started with being proactive, the habit of choice. You can sit back and be a victim, if you will, or you can be proactive and make a decision. When we talk about our marriages, when we talk about our families, the point that we made is no one wants a bad marriage, right? No one enters into it saying that no one even wants an average marriage. No one wants just a good marriage. Everybody wants a great marriage, wants a great family. Well, the point that we want to make with habit number one is that doesn't happen by accident. If you want a great marriage, you may have a good marriage, but if you want it to be great, there's things that you have to do. It just won't, you won't stumble into a great marriage, is what I'm saying. It takes work, and we have to treat it as such. And so being proactive is deciding from day one, or deciding on year 33, that we're going to have a great marriage. And we're going to incorporate these things and making that decision and putting a plan together that gets you there. You know, beginning with the end in mind, that habit of vision, if you will. What is most important? Where do you want to be? And that's the goal. That's the vision. And what you want is a principle-centered vision, not necessarily an emotional vision. You want to make those decisions, and you have a goal, that's what you want to do, and you're going to work on it together, putting first things first. So that is the habit of integrity. All right, so you've established what's important to you. Do you have the integrity to see it through? Do you have this? Are you going to stick to it? And so that periodically you're going to get distracted from what's truly important, right? Periodically, things happen, and you're gonna say and do things that aren't consistent with this vision. Do you have the integrity to get back on track? Right. So that's kind of where we want to get to, and it's that example that we used in these first three habits was the idea of an airplane, where an airplane is off course roughly 98% of the time. If the pilot doesn't make corrections, then he will not arrive at his destination. And so the pilot is constantly making corrections, but he's using his instruments, he's using landmarks, and he's using a compass to get him back on track. And he's constantly making those changes in his flight path to get back on track. And that's what those first three habits do. Same thing in our marriages, same thing in our family. We're going to get off track. The question is, are you using the right compass to get back on track? That's what we want to strive for. Then think win-win, you know, all the different scenarios, lose-win, the win-lose, all those things, the lose-lose, right? That all those things happen. You want to get to a win-win thing. And by the way, we are playing boardroom bingo, so everybody has a bingo card, and we're going to use all these phrases that are discussed in boardrooms all the time. The last time we talked about seek first to understand and then to be understood. What did that mean? In terms of Proverbs 29:11, what does that mean? Seek to understand and then to be understood. So it's a two-part habit. What did that mean? Yes, ma'am.
Listen first and then speak.
Right. And it's active listening, right? It's not just, all right, are you done? All right, now it's my turn. It's not that. You really want to understand why someone did what they did. Help me understand your decision process. Help me understand why that's important to you. Help me understand. And then it's clarifying questions. And then you want your perspective to be understood. Who's got that passage, Proverbs 29? Verse 11. Just read it. Yeah, Steve. Go ahead. Yes, ma'am.
A fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back.
Right. So a fool just vents, right? But a wise man kind of holds it in. So part of this whole, we talked about examples of poor communication and good communication, right? There's no shortage of funny cartoons on the internet with what poor communication is all about. Right, but is there a chance? Is there a time, or apparently in Proverbs there is, that you just kind of hold your peace? Probably yes, is what I would say. Right, that's what I would say. And why would you? Why would you? Why is it that that's practicing wisdom? Right.
Because something being said could either make the situation worse.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not make it better.
Mm-hmm.
There could be time for cooling off, thinking through.
Right. It's what Stephen Covey calls hitting the pause button. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Before you say something, you hit that pause button. That doesn't mean you don't finish the conversation, because it might be something important, but you want to pause before you say something that you're going to regret. Yeah, Clay.
A few verses before that, verse 9, when a wise man has a controversy with a foolish man, the foolish man either rages or laughs, and there is no rest.
Ah.
So the result of that,
yes,
is no rest, which is not what we want in our family.
No. And the question is, what purpose do you have to say what you want to say? It's germinating somewhere back in here, right? And there's about 6 inches from here to my tongue. So what is the purpose? We talked a lot about that. Have a purpose for what you're saying. If the purpose is, I want to get the last word in. If the purpose is to win the argument, then you're much better off just keeping your mouth shut and practicing wisdom and not saying it. Because it won't help the situation. It's only going to make that situation worse, right? It won't help in any shape, form, or fashion by just venting sometimes. And, you know, I think there's a difference. Lynn and I could vent at each other about something, a third party kind of a thing. That's sometimes helpful to get that off your chest, and it's great that you have a partner that will let you vent like that. But it often doesn't pay off when you just vent at your spouse or vent at your children. That doesn't always serve the purpose that you want. What's the purpose of getting it done? You know, it's like that one story that Cubby told about the little boy that tried to help, and he took all the water out of the toilet bowl and put it on the floor and was trying to help his mom clean. Well, she could have vented, right? But her goal, her vision was, I want to raise this little boy. The vision was not to scold him and to make him and to belittle him. She wants him to grow up helping and to be a giver. So she found a different way to instruct him that wasn't the kind of behavior that we want to practice in this household. So that's the kind of thing I think that's important that we go with. So now we're on this whole thing called synergy, which I know that is, what is it, Lindsay, a 1970s word or 80s word maybe? I don't know. And it's true. Now, I'm not disagreeing with you. It is true. So the boardroom bingo, everybody can put it out there. So, again, as is the case, you know, we're going to talk about what synergy is. But remember what we're talking about in general is a habit that is effective, right? So a habit is that combination of knowledge, desire, and skill. It is that intersection up there, the what, the how, and the want. That intersection there. And it's something that you can do without really thinking about it, right? That's the thing. Now, the effective part is more than just being successful. It's accomplishing the vision, right? That's an effective person. It's not just somebody that always gets what they want, whether that's in the family or in the boardroom. It's somebody that is successful, is effective in reaching their destination. That's the kind of habits that we're talking about here. So again, there's no shortage of things. Synergy is the code word for lazy people who want you to do all the work. Right? So there's that. And I think any of us in high school or in college, when the teacher puts you in a team, most of us kind of dread that. And why do we dread that? Because not everybody does equal shares of the carries the load the same, right? That happens, I think, a lot. One does not simply walk into synergy. I like that one, Senator Terrence. And again, I think what Lindsay was saying is just overused. You know, so here's a guy with a teeter totter in his office. I want to see if my new employees have synergy. Why mess up alone when you can take the whole team down with you? And it's amazing, it's teamwork, it's amazing how much easier it is for a team to work together when no one has any idea where they're going, right? So all that is very true when you work with teams and so forth. So now, I went a step further, right? And we wanted to use a thesaurus as best as we can, right? And try to look at teamwork, your synergy, teamwork, alliance, co-action, harmony, symbiotic, synergy, union, unity, combined effort, team effort, all those sorts of things. And so I looked at, you know, the cooperation. We have a lot more words that we can use that we talk about cooperation. And then finally, co-action, which is another one of the words that kind of jumped off the page at me. The thing is that synergy, is not tolerating the differences between husband and wife. It's not working independently. It's not thinking you're always right, and it's not just compromise. It's not just giving in on all things. But synergy is celebrating the differences. It is teamwork. It is being open-minded. It is finding new and better ways to accomplish the task that's at hand. Right. So all those things are valuable to us. And here's an example that I came across. So they did a study. That they learned, it depended on the kind of breed and the environment and how heavy the wagon was and so forth. But a horse could pull about 2,000 pounds. So how much could two horses pull? 4,000 pounds, right? That would make a lot of sense. You know, interesting was that they did it in a couple different ways. They put blinders on the horses. And they were, in fact, two horses could pull 4,000 pounds. But when they took the blinders off, those same two horses were not able to pull 24,000 pounds. Right? The fact now they realized that they were working with somebody and that they were dependent on one another, they were able to accomplish so much more working together than they could independently. And a lot of times that's what we want. When we form a union with our spouse, that's what we want to accomplish. We want to accomplish that kind of synergy that's out there. And, you know, going back to our habits, though, you know, you have this, I guess, definition of synergy, a combined power of a group of things when they are working together that is greater than the total power achieved by working separately. And the key there is that it is all about working together, right? So that the team, you and your spouse, you and your family, is in fact able to accomplish the vision that you wrote down. Remember the family mission statement that we all we assign that to everybody. Hopefully everybody is still working on that. That just wasn't a task that we wanted you to check off. That's an important document for you and your family to work toward. And I really, really encourage you to take that seriously. And depending on where you go, there's, you know, typically seven components of a synergistic relationship, if you will. And a lot of this, I think, comes from more work environments. But you have, you know, clarity so that you have clearly defined goals. So that, you know, that poster about teamwork where the rowboat, everybody's, no one knew where they were going. Well, that obviously doesn't work right now. By the way, those came from a website called despair.com. So if you really want a phenomenal laugh, go on despair.com. They take, this is free. This has nothing to do with relationships. But you know, you walk into somebody's office and there's a brilliant, vibrant picture of a lion, and it underneath it says courage, and then it describes, gives a motivational, encouraging kind of definition of what courage is all about. This does the opposite. They call them demotivators. They take it, you know, your teamwork. None of us is as dumb as all of us. You know, things like that. Any consultants in the room? Yeah. So the definition of consultants is, if you're not part of the solution, there's money to be made in prolonging the problem. Right? So go to despair.com. You'll have a great time. You can buy mints, coffee mugs, posters, calendars, all kinds of great things. Great, you know, white elephant type stuff at Christmas time. So clarity, clearly defining the goals. That commitment. So everybody, when you write the family mission statement, right, there's a commitment there. Everybody in the family has to be included in that. And it's important that everybody be a part of that because there's a commitment. If I just come home and say, okay, from now on, this is the way we're going to do it as a family, how much buy-in do I have? It's the same thing at work. If I just dictate from the top down, you know, and use leverage or power to get my way, that's not being very effective. That isn't the kind of leader that I want to be, whether it's at work or at home. But if the family decides on the long-term vision of where we want to be as a family, then you have the commitment that I think that's necessary. You got to clearly communicate what that is. And that communication gets us back to this integrity, or the first thing, letting people know you're cooperating, that habit of win-win, the empowerment. You give people the understanding. You give them the authority and the latitude that they need. Then the last two kind of deal with the same thing, appreciation and respect. All these things, I think, are really important in developing the kind of synergy that we want to have in our homes. And ultimately, from a definition standpoint, it's 1 + 1 = 3. Right? So it's not two anymore, but it becomes greater than the individual components and what they could do. The idea of the horses that we talked about, you know, so you got to get your priorities straight. You got to listen with understanding. You got to allow room for the best kind of solutions that might be available to you. And that idea of respect in the last one is really important, I think. That mutual respect between each other is very important, I believe, within a family. Because if somebody feels disrespected or unappreciated, I mean, it's hard to keep doing what they know to be the right thing to do, right? So, other examples in nature is like composite material, a material made from two or more constituent materials, and together they form something stronger, they form something better than what they had. Like concrete, for example, is made up of a couple different things. It's got the gravel in there, and we'll come back to that. And it's got the concrete, it's got the mixture to hold it all together, Right. So, but together they're able to accomplish much more than that. And so you have ideas. I think, you know, whether it's concrete, fiberglass, plywood, metal alloys, all these things are not individual, but they are simply a compound of different materials, all of which make the end result stronger than before. Turn to Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12, please. Jason, can you read that for me? Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12. You know, I think about a mixed breed dog, right? I've heard this. Some of you might know more than I do. I've heard that a mixed breed dog is typically healthier and stronger than a purebred dog. Is that, and why would that be? Yes, the weaknesses in a breed tend to minimize over time, right? And so a mixed breed dog is typically healthier, has less vet bills, maybe not as valuable, but tend to be great pets. Go ahead, read, please.
Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow, but woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm, but how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken.
Right. So, I mean, to me, that's a perfect scriptural example of what synergy is all about. When you are together as a team, your husband and your wife are working together, and you're combining your strengths, you're minimizing your weaknesses. Those are the kinds of things that I think are critically important to us. Now, you know, not to keep beating the. I was hoping Jason Ridge would be here because then he would explain that, this a little bit better. So, this is sodium and that's chlorine, right? Both are very poisonous individual elements. If you were to take a bite of sodium, that would be the last bite that you would ever take. If you were to breathe chlorine, a pure gas, again, that'd be the last breath that you ever take. What happens when you combine those and you create something different? Does anybody know? Table salt, right? That's all you. So it is taking two different elements and combining them together to create something extremely valuable, right? What was that? You like salt a lot? Did you say, David, you're my salt? You should have.
Yeah.
That would be making a deposit in what?
His emotion.
That's exactly what that would have been. You missed a chance right there. Yeah. That's what she meant to say. Right? That's what she meant to say. Right. That's an important thing. So, you know, and again, so you have this whole idea in our relationships about cooperation and trust, and you could have, you know, be more defensive. And sometimes when we make too many withdrawals out of the emotional bank account, then there's a complete lack of trust, right? I don't necessarily trust you with this information. I don't necessarily trust your motives. And so it's important that you constantly make emotional or deposits into that bank account so that your trust factor gets higher. You know, being just merely respectful, it's to me, that's like saying we're at peace simply because we're not fighting. Is that really what peace is? No. You know, peace, I think the Hebrew word shalom is really what it means is that which makes for man's highest good. What that means is sometimes I got to step on your toes to create peace. Right? Sometimes one has to tell me things that I may not want to hear. Now, but again, because the trust is high, she's got so many deposits in the emotional bank account, I can take that criticism because I know that she's trying to create peace. I may not like it, but there's peace there because she's doing something that makes for my betterment, that makes for my highest good. And that's the deposits, you know, that she's trying to make, even if I don't like it. But again, she can't do that if the trust is down here, right? Because otherwise, don't we all have these walls that go up? If you hear criticism, everybody gets very defensive, right? I think that's a fairly natural reaction that we all have. And we can't afford that. And we, unfortunately, that happens because we don't trust the other person that's doing the criticizing. Because then our normal response is, yeah, well, your nose is big, right? So you say something else to level the playing field, whatever that might be, and you're trying your best not to lower that wall because you don't like, you don't trust that person that is there. Well, the goal would obviously be all the way up here. In our New Testament, you have this whole idea of the body. Turn to 1 Corinthians 12. I'll read several verses here. And there's a couple paragraphs that David Maxim captured, I think, in here, in the book, page 249, and then again on 251. It is using our bodies as an example of what synergy is all about and what we could then accomplish in our marriages, within our families. Who could read verses 12 through 31 for me? Jordan, can you read 1 Corinthians 12, 12 through 31?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
For even as the body is one and yet has many members, and all the members of the body, though they are many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and we were all made to drink of one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot says, because I am not a hand, I am not part of the body, it is not for this reason any less a part of the body. And if the ear says, because I am not an eye, I am not part of the body, it is not for this reason any less part of the body. Excuse me. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? If the whole were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? But now God has placed the members, each one of them, in the body just as he desired. For if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now there are many members, but one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need for need of you. Or again, the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Through what?
Through 31. Yes.
On the contrary, it is much truer that the members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary, and those members of the body which we deem less honorable, on these we now bestow more abundant honor, and our less presentable members become much more presentable, whereas our more presentable members have no need of it. But God has so composed the body, giving more abundant honor to that member which lacks, so that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all members rejoice with it. Now you are Christ's body, and individually members of it. And God has appointed in the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, then miracles, then gifts of healings, helps, administrations, various kinds of tongues. All are not apostles, are they? All are not prophets, are they? All are not teachers, are they? All are not workers of miracles, are they? All do not have gifts of healings, do they? All do not speak with tongues, do they? All do not interpret, do they? But earnestly desire the greater gifts, and I will show you still a more excellent way.
Right. And then Paul will go into, so he's describing, he's using the human body to describe how we work together as a body of Christ, correct? That's what Paul is using. He uses it multiple times, right? He'll talk to the Ephesians about it. We'll look at the Romans text in just a second. But he uses that same illustration over and over and over again. And ultimately, I mean, the point is the same. Within the church, everybody has different skills, right? And individually, I mean, those skills are valuable. But when you couple those skills with somebody else that has different skills and weaknesses, right, then that body of Christ can accomplish so much more, right? So one person could speak in tongues and one person could prophesy. Well, if they just went their separate ways, they would accomplish some good, would they not? But if they both go out together, Then more situations that they might run into, somebody that doesn't speak their language. Well, guess what? We have a solution for that. Because while I might not be able to speak in tongues, my partner here can. And I, my partner doesn't have the ability necessarily to teach, but I do. And so together, this will be my interpreter, and we can go from there. So together, you can accomplish great and wonderful things. And the same is true, I think, within our marriages. And so when you want to look at this, and that's that passage, I guess I could put that up there. So when we talk about, you know, our relationships, we ask the question early on, why do we get married? A lot of different reasons. And these things are true. I mean, opposites attract. You know, that's pretty important. I think if two people, my father always said, if two people agree on everything, one of them isn't needed. Right? I think that's, you know, critically important. You know, you want to make sure that you have somebody that has a different opinion than you. Somebody that compliments, somebody that, you know, has a different perspective on things. And they compensate for my weaknesses. They overcome the things that I may not be all that good at. And all of these things, I think, form a complete family unit, if you will. Because when Paul's using this example of the body in chapter 12 of 1 Corinthians, he ends it. So he's talking about the body and all the different parts. The hand can't save the foot. You're not important, right? And even those parts that don't get a lot of glory, right? Is anybody here ever had an ingrown toenail before? Yeah. How bad is that? It's awful. It's awful. Let me tell you, it is. You have no idea how often you bump your foot against something during a day until you had this, and you had a podiatrist. When a podiatrist says this is going to hurt, you need to believe him. Kind of like when your dentist says the same thing, you need to believe what the dentist is telling you, because this is going to hurt, right? And yet the big toe doesn't get a whole lot of glory. In fact, we cover it up. We want to see it. But the big toe is critically important. You don't have any kind of balance. You can't run. You can't jump. You can't do a lot of things without the big toe, right? So when I taught the high school class, going through the book of Romans, we got to this passage in Romans 12 about the human body. We all should desire to become the big toe, because that's kind of like the anchor, right? That's kind of where we can get our strength from. And it's not a body part that we want to talk about that much. But get an ingrown toenail, and you'll discover what I mean by that. And this whole passage, we had this as our theme 1 year. From the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. Again, just like that example of teamwork, you know, we all dread being put into a team in school because somebody on the team was going to be a slacker. In this particular example, when the family unit functions the way it's supposed to function, then no one's resting. No one is not doing their part because it's essential. It's just like a human body. So I started thinking, right? So what does, for those of you who are married, what does your spouse bring to the party? What are their strengths that complement your weaknesses? Yes.
I'll share just because this has been in my mind ever since we walked into this room and talking about it. So about, it was probably 8-9 years ago, I was working a lot of Saturdays, and Dave would be home with the girls, and they were very little. And I really love to check things off the list. So I'd be like, here's the things that are going on today. If you want to go do them with the girls, they'd have a super great time, and probably, I don't know, like, it'd be educational or whatever, too. Yeah. And then I'd come home, and I'd be like, what y'all do? And he'd be like, we played some games and, you know, made some sandwiches and did some things. And I'd be like,
yeah, you're, you know, twitching. Like a little
twitchy.
You're starting to twitch.
Yeah. But I would try to not give full vent, you know, that's all I'm going to say. And so, anyway, over time, I realized, like, that was, like, he's, like, the chill parent. And he was building relationships with them. Whereas, like, with
you
me.
You know how many heads are nodding right now? I got to tell you.
Whereas, like, with me, like, I realized over time, like, I think the girls really like Saturdays because they get a great read. Being like, okay, girls, let's do this. Now the end goal is this. And so even now, like, he's built that relationship. He is responsible for their pop culture education. They watch movies together. And if he asks them to do something, they hop too, because
that's when it's serious business.
Okay.
He brings such a calm, you know, like, if you want things done, like, I can handle that.
Right.
But if you want
to... If you want things not done.
Hey, I'll take the sword. I'll do that. You don't want anything to come from today, baby? I'm your guy.
We're going for the win-win.
What would happen if both of you were the chill parent or both of you were the box checker?
Yeah, because he never said, I'm not gonna do that stuff with them. He always would listen, and again, this is not me saying that Dave doesn't do anything, but I think he's chosen in many ways the better way.
Sure.
And they have the kids are I really think I would be like, well, like tiger mom to them, into being like horribly miserable people if left to my own devices.
But they need that too, right?
Getting things done like
is important
and have it working like that.
Right, but it's nice to have both, and so there is a complement there.
Right.
Together, you have both organized and chilled children.
Yeah.
Or the goal would be in that regard, right? But I think that's important, right? But you recognize that.
And I value that very much, because I very much have needed in my life to be brought down to a sustainable level.
Right. So choosing your battles better, right? So David helps you choose your battles with the girls, right? What other things do you have in your relationships that now your husband is giving me the eye? Go ahead.
Well, it's sort of
bothering me.
I'm
already
staying on time. I am never.
Okay.
And ever.
Right?
I come by, honestly, my whole family's kind of like that.
Right?
That's his big pet peeve. And I need that. I mean, obviously, it's never good to be late every week. So you don't want that to be the one thing that people think about. Oh, well.
Right.
Always tell Allison 30 minutes ahead of time.
Right.
But that probably is what people think about me. So he helps me.
Good to know, honey, next time we have him. Good to know. Just tell Will. Pretty much it, right? So punctuality versus what's her skill? Oh, I put you on the spot. I really did. That was unfair. Totally unfair. It's okay to say she's pretty.
So many, but I would say one that has really come to life for the last couple of years is her ability to set good expectations for children, like, and understand, help me understand, like, well, so you mean I can't just, like, go put her in time out right now? Like, she doesn't understand that.
Right.
She doesn't get it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not really my thing.
Gotcha.
My thing is like, okay, you need me to do something now?
Gotcha. Right.
Who was that?
Yes. So, yes, Chester.
Who was that?
That was Will. Opal. Yes.
I think as you get to know each other better, and as we've only been married for 2 years, you realize people's strengths. And even though you already knew there was a strength, you really get to depend on it. And I think, for instance, even is really good with finances. Extremely good with finances.
Right.
Well, I'm more visual. So
yeah.
In his businesses now, I think I have a vision for you know, designing or decorating. Well, we learned to combine those strengths to get better project results.
Yes.
And I think it's actually worked really well for both of us.
Right.
But we have to recognize where our strengths are because, you know, I want to put Marvel everywhere. He's like, no. I have to learn to listen too, you know. And, for the most part, is right.
So he's frugal and you like Marvel. No, those are
That would be ideal.
That's an interesting combination of things, right?
No, but it really it plays well. I mean, it's really, really a good. I can see the difference with my parents, where my parents were very, very much alike in many, many ways. And when it's good, it's really good. But when it's bad, it's really bad.
Right.
So having those differences
they complement.
They complement. So. It makes a good difference.
I mean, can you imagine a family where neither is frugal, neither is good with money, right? Can you imagine the situation that would arise in that regard? Anything else that your spouse, from your weaknesses and what their strengths and how together, you make one really good person. Yeah, so a lot of people don't want to get in trouble, right? So that happens a lot. You know, so I struggled with understanding the strengths that I bring to the marriage. I mean, when you start thinking about that realistically, you know, I think Lynn is well grounded and very steady. She's organized, strong, dependable structure. She knows when to bend and when not to, right? So she has this skill of saying, no, this is, you know, when you think of the end in mind, there are certain things that are uncompromisable. Is that an English
word? Non-negotiable.
What's that? Non-negotiable. Thank you very much. So there's certain things there, but there's other things that we can bend on, right? We can do different things on. And there's tenderness, there's all those wonderful things. She is the one that's good with money in our family. We would be living under some bridge somewhere if it were left up to me. There was a time in our marriage, I guarantee, before direct deposits, if I tried to cash my own paycheck, the bank would say that's not your signature. Am I lying? No, that's true. Because she's been signing my name for so long, they would not recognize my signature as my own. I probably could not even cash my own paycheck. So, and the deal was, just let me know if I need to find a second job. You know, that was the overall arrangement that we had set for one another. But in general, I think, though, and hopefully, that there are strengths and weaknesses in each one of us, and that our spouse brings out the best. The spouse overrides our weaknesses, right? And the important thing is, when you talk about synergy, it is a recognition of that. And a recognition, none of us like if you're interviewing for a job, you know, and somebody, and inevitably somebody's going to say, tell me what your greatest weakness is, right? That's a tough question, because no one wants to answer it, and everybody says, well, I work too hard. You know, that's my greatest weakness, right? So that's, because you don't want to say, I oversleep all the time. That's a bad answer to an interview question, isn't it? Right? But ultimately, what are your weaknesses, right? And how is it that your spouse can help you overcome those weaknesses? Maybe you don't even have the book, and some of you may or may not. Boom, 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 boom. So, did y'all read the story of the couch? It's on page 59. Basically, the gist is this couple bought their first new house. It was a fixer-upper, and they had a hand-me-down of a hand-me-down of a hand-me-down couch in there that they were embarrassed to have people come over and take a look at, you know, and invite people over. So they're embarrassed. So they, you know, they live paycheck to paycheck. It was one of those things. But they finally decided, we need to buy a new couch, you know, something that we could be proud of. And they established a budget, go to the store. Well, immediately the husband decides, you know, because there's this one sofa that they both really like, but it wasn't in the budget. It was significantly higher than that, right? And in this story, and the salesperson certainly wasn't happy with it. And eventually, you know, he would say, the husband just said, okay, we'll take it. With the wife going with this deer in the headlight look, like, we can't afford that couch, right? Ultimately, you know, it'll look nice for the month that it's in our house until we have to start paying for it every single month, right? Because there was some sort of financing. And we're not kind of, we're going to pick up here, I think, since I've got one extra class than I thought I did, we're going to be able to pick up here. But what I might do is copy these pages and email them out to everybody in the class, for those of you who don't have the book. Because what I want you to do is talk about that between yourselves, about how the wife handled this and how the husband handled it, and how they could complement one another, how they sought to get a win-win out of this situation, you know, and because it was kind of touchy. She knew they couldn't afford it. He was determined to get the couch. And ultimately, though, I mean, it boiled down to, you know, she had to ask a lot of questions. Why was it that important? And ultimately, he finally gives her the real reason why he wanted that particular couch. And it wasn't the couch necessarily. It was the image that came with that particular couch. So, guess, you know, this has never happened in any Larry Brown class ever. But I'm going to stop there. Because if we go on, then I'm going to hold you afterwards, and the bells will start ringing, and everybody with small children. So anyway, we'll pick up there Wednesday night. Please pick up the material in the back about sharpening your saw, because we're going to start that also on Wednesday. We'll finish the synergy, and we'll talk about sharpening.